It's time for Forward Nation Radio. Now here he is, the host of Forward Nation Radio, David Leventhal.
Welcome to Forward Nation Radio. Thank you for joining us on this, the post-anniversary Women's March edition of Forward Nation Radio, or as it's known at Fox News, Bitch, Where's My Dinner? Also, post-government shutdown. Sorry, I gotta get this. Sorry about that. Sorry. Hello, United States government. Yes, we're open for business. Yes, us too. February 8th. Yeah. Okay, thank you for calling. Yeah. Okay, listen, viewers, I'm really sorry about that. But, you know, the Trump economy has been really, really good for rich people, but not so great for wages have remained stagnant, and job growth is pretty much non-existent. So for normal people like myself, especially those of us living in blue states, we need to do what we can to try to make ends meet and pay for our tax increases that are coming next year. So I'm answering phones for the United States government. Anyway, yes, we had... Sorry, that's me again. I gotta do this. This is a Twitter thing. Okay. Ha ha! Did you notice how Senator Schumer and his Democrat people really took it this time? Trying to shut down our government and failing. Losers. Okay, I really don't need to do that right now. Hey, Damien. I think that I'm one of the people who've gotten one of those thousands of fake Russian bots.
Yeah, you know you might be, and yeah.
Yeah, they've been blaming the Democrats for the shutdown of the government.
Heard that.
Yeah, Russian. The question, of course, becomes, who falls for this kind of crap? Who falls for this stuff with the bots? Well, if you've been looking at the New York Times at all this week, there was an editorial last week that talked about Trump supporters and how they're still on board and they love all the things he's done, none of which he's actually. I'm sorry. Seriously, I'm sorry. I got a message through Twitter. I am very sexy woman looking for good time. You are, I saw you. You are very handsome man with big, oh, this is, I gotta follow this one. Hit a like. There we go. Anyway, what was I talking about?
Who falls for this crap?
Yeah. So who falls for this kind of Russian bot crap anyway? People who hear things that they're just desperate to believe, that comport with what they've already believed, no matter how ridiculous reality has. All right, seriously, this is it. This is an email now from Twitter. Hey, jackass. Congratulations. You are now the 677,776th person in America who either liked or retweeted a message from a Russian bot. I knew that. Listen, that's it. I'm shutting the phone off. okay? Whatever, the federal government will just have to get along without me until February 8th, at least for the next half an hour anyway. Where was it? Yeah, the Russian bots, which at this point are really pissing me off, and they should be pissing us all off, okay? We don't need fake news and propaganda from Russia. No, why are we always outsourcing things that we could do perfectly well here in America? We've got our own fake news here in America. We've got Fox News. We've got the Murdochs. We've got the Koch brothers. We've got the Mercers, Sheldon Adelson, Sinclair. Why do we have to be outsourcing the fake news, the bullshit, the propaganda to Russia when we could be doing it right here at home, American made, because we have the best bullshit in the world? Why can't we do with fake news what we've done with solar panels? Clearly also a legitimate threat to America. Maybe we should be imposing a 30% tariff on Russian bots, on Russian propaganda, which would perhaps shut down the Russian propaganda industry in the same way it's about to shut down the U.S. solar panel industry. I guess the difference is that shutting down the solar power industry benefits the big fossil fuel industries that run this country, whereas shutting down Russian propaganda would actually undermine the big fossil fuel. Yeah, I guess that's how the connection is made. Anyway, a big story for today, of course, is the government shutdown. You might have noticed that we were shut down for a little while earlier in the week. The focus, of course, has been so far on the politics of the government shutdown. We will talk a little bit about the politics and what it means. Did the Democrats get rolled? Of course the Democrats got rolled. We'll talk a little bit about why the Democrats got rolled and what the implications are. The fact is the Democrats got rolled. Also, in breaking news, this hot off the presses, turns out before the Super Bowl, New England Patriots holder for their place kicker got injured, and they've hired Lucy Van Pelt. Lucy Van Pelt has promised that this time she will hold the football. So I think New England's on pretty solid ground going into the Super Bowl. That, of course, referring to the fact that what the Democrats did get out of this shutdown was a promise. Well, not necessarily a promise. I understand now a promise has become a pledge, has become a source, possibly a future discussion, from Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell that they would actually allow a vote and debate on DACA for the shutdown on February 8th. They're already backing away from that, but Democrats probably got something really important here, like New England got an important holder for their place kicker. I understand that McConnell, in case people were a little bit concerned that he may not abide by his promise, I understand that he got a strong recommendation from Susan Collins and from Jeff Flake that the Democrats could trust Mitch McConnell. When he gives his word, he abides by it. Okay, so the Democrats got rolled. They relied on a promise by Mitch McConnell, which isn't going to be a promise to get them out of it. But to be fair to the Democrats, they had no hand to play in this battle. And they were going to lose, and I think it was a good thing that they ended it early before it got even worse. You read about what was at stake. Hundreds of thousands of government workers were furloughed. Where in particular did those cuts hit the hardest? The Environmental Protection Agency and Housing and Urban Development. In case you haven't noticed, Republicans don't give a shit about the EPA or HUD. The only way they care about those agencies at all is to hollow them out so they don't do their job. Democrats, on the other hand, believe in the mission of these agencies and the federal government. So they had more to lose. Also, we talk a lot about how, we've talked in the past, and you've undoubtedly read people talk about, how popular the issues that the Democrats are fighting for, particularly DACA, are among the American public. DACA, depending on which survey you look at, has the approval of 80 or 90% of Americans, including two-thirds of Republicans. So it was felt that the Democrats had a strong hand. But what became perfectly clear is something we talked about in the entirety of our show last week. We hope you had a chance to watch it. And that is that ultimately, no matter what people say about DACA, for much of America, racism is going to trump all. No pun intended. And the bottom line, the support for DACA was a soft support. And when people started hearing that their government was being shut down, their jobs were at stake because of some brown-skinned people, a lot of those people who supported DACA were quickly flocking away. And in fact, if the Democrats allowed this battle to continue, I don't think it would have been good for DACA. It certainly wouldn't have been good for the Democrats. Democrats are a hard hand to play in large part because of the tremendous amount of racism, to some degree, from much of the Republican Party and much of this country at large. Steve Bannon said, famously, a few months ago, that he loved whenever the Democrats turned elections into a referendum, in effect, on race and whiteness. And as long as they talked about anything that the Republicans could draw a distinction between brown-skinned people and white-skinned people, the Republicans were going to win. So what does this portend for 2020 and 2018? Democratic Party was exciting to see, for the most part, was very unified. We've seen that through most of 2017, and that's going to be necessary for the Democrats to take back power in 2018 and then 2020. They are going to need to be unified because it has become perfectly clear that 35% of this country will support Trump and the Republicans no matter what the hell they do. So the Democrats are going to have to be unified, they're going to have to go out and vote, and they're going to have to get their base energized. That, of course, is a concern for them walking away or seeming to walk away a little bit from the DACA fight. And they better keep up the fight, even if it's not a question of closing down the government over it. It was interesting to see the breakdown of how the Democratic senators voted and how the expected presidential hopefuls were saying, let's continue the fight. Of course, they were able to do that because they knew, in large part, that their colleagues were ending the fight and they could take a principled stand that wasn't going to cost their party or themselves anything. The expectation maybe is that in 2020, Democrats are going to be able to run to the left as a populist, a true populist party, as opposed to the faux populism of the Trump administration, actually standing for the people. But in 2018, in order to take back the Senate and a gerrymandered Congress, well, that's a different type of voter, and that's a different electorate. And they need to be more cautious there. In any event, my producer Damien and I were having a long discussion before the show about the Democratic message and what it needs to be for 2018 and beyond. I tend to feel he's very critical of the Democrats, and rightly so, for not unifying behind an obvious message. My concern is that the Democrats have a real disadvantage when it comes to bumper sticker politics, which is what we are generally engaged in this country. One, Republicans deal with oversimplifications. Oversimplifications work better on bumper stickers than discussions, argument, reason, debate. It just is easy to boil down a message of white people under attack versus here's why immigrants are actually good for this country. And of course, the fact that the Republicans have a built-in advantage going into elections, as far as the message, that Democratic arguments are more complicated, and they are appealing to people's better natures. And if Republicans can boil this down to, they're coming to take your daughter, they're coming to take your whiteness, that unfortunately gives them a huge head start. So that's the politics. Let's not forget, as much of the media is doing, what the substance is of the government shutdown debate. What are the Republicans actually fighting over? Well, we mentioned DACA's popularity, the Children's Health Insurance Program, a bipartisan effort that has 90% approval ratings, including most Republicans. They're fighting over that. Related to the whole CHIP thing, yes, the Republicans have agreed to extend CHIP for 6 years. Interestingly, the Congressional Budget Office came out with a budget estimate on extending CHIP. Extending it for 6 years will cost the federal government a grand total of $0 because it provides health care to children more efficiently than what they will end up doing if we destroy CHIP. Interestingly, though, the CBO also pointed out that the 10-year estimate, if we had extended CHIP for 10 years, that would have actually made the government $6 billion. Lost in this fight is it's not just about CHIP. By not freeing up any money there, the Republicans are able to shut down community health centers, a big part of their proposal. Community health centers would serve 1 in 12 Americans, most poor Americans, served efficiently in community health centers, first funded under the Affordable Care Act. There are 2,800 facilities across America giving local community health care, serving 9 million people efficiently. There's no funding in that for the future. So once again, Republicans are standing up very clearly and fighting to deny health care to the American public. Of course, they're also fighting to get rid of tax increases under the Affordable Care Act. They've managed to do that one. Get rid of $31 billion in taxes that would have hit primarily better off individuals, such as those who have Cadillac health plans. Congressional Budget Office also reported that this year the deficit has gone up in the first few months of this fiscal year over what it had been before. It will go up further because these tax cuts are not paid for. This is what the Republicans are fighting for. That, of course, and a wall that nobody needs and can't be built. Oh, and by the way, Mexico is going to pay for. What does this say for the future? The first question that comes up is, who are the Democrats negotiating with in the future? Even the Republicans are asking this question. Who are we negotiating with? There was a bipartisan deal, as most of you know, in the Senate. Trump supported it, and then he didn't. Trump supported DACA in February. He talked about the absolutely incredible kids who deserve to be treated with heart. In September, he ordered the program ended. 2 weeks ago, he promoted the bill that would deliver a bill of love to DACA recipients. A few days after that, that was the end of that. How do you deal with President Whimsy, who rejected Graham Durbin 2 days after talking about his bill of love? This is the difficulty of dealing with a president who changes his mind like people change their sock. No, that's not a good example. Some people don't change their socks all that often. Who his chief of staff refers to as uninformed and evolving. Lindsey Graham, Republican senator, blames it on Stephen Miller and John Kelly whispering in Donald Trump's ear their anti-immigrant message as a way to fire up their base. Oh, that's great. Whatever we're talking about in the Senate, people say even if the Senate creates a deal, how are they going to get it through the House? A House that's so gerrymandered that it's run by Republican lunatics, by the extremist base of the Republican Party. who will be appealed to with terms like illegals. 10% of this country is holding the rest of us hostage to moving forward. Trump's shithole comments and how they have not angered his base tells the whole story of where they stand. They're not going to be quick to welcome immigrants. Who's going to deal with these people? Again, what we see is the intensity matters. Intelligent people care a lot about DACA. They care a lot about the Children's Health Program. Are they as rabid in favor of these things as the Republican base is against them? They're not as rabid at anything as the Republican base is. In the news this week relevant to this discussion of the government shutdown is the Pennsylvania gerrymandering. Pennsylvania Supreme Court ruling on Pennsylvania's gerrymandering. Pennsylvania, which is a very mixed state, went for Trump in the past election and gone for Obama in both the elections before then. Of its 18 congressional seats, 13 of them are held by Republicans. Not because that's what the voter wants, but because that's what the state drew up. Well, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court has said that is unconstitutional, perhaps paving the way for the United States Supreme Court. We've talked at length in this show about Gil v. Whitford and the gerrymandering decision. The Supreme Court has taken up another case on gerrymandering, this one challenging the Democrats. Maybe they could show their bipartisanship by striking them both down. Earlier, a few days ago in the New York Times, David Brooks, a Republican who likes to be advertised as a Republican who's moderate, that progressives can deal with, had this wonderful line in his column. The American people are, well, Democrats, small d. They believe that if a party wants to get its way, it should, you know, win an election or two, not blow the place up just because it lost. I want to be clear, David Brooks did not say this 8 years ago or 6 years ago, whenever the Republicans, having lost elections, were blowing the place up. No, he's using it now, David Brooks. Well, maybe, you know, the Democrats should try winning an election rather than shutting the government down. Thank you, David Brooks, for standing up for democracy and giving us an opportunity once again to talk about so many things that are wrong with this country. First of all, the fundamental problem of short memory. David Brooks will be perfectly aware of the Republicans' effort to stop people from voting. David Brooks is perfectly aware that the Republicans lost the presidential election, small d democracy-wise, that is. David Brooks is aware that the Senate is non-democratic. And yet he manages to conveniently forget that when it's an opportunity to attack Democrats for shutting down the government when the American people clearly don't want that. Well, anybody in this country at this point who uses democracy to justify what the Republicans are doing is either a liar or a jackass. They lost the presidential election. If the people in this country believe in democracy, small d, then Hillary Clinton should be the president. The Democrats should control the House of Representatives and screw the gerrymandering. The Democrats should control the Senate. All this is going on. That's right, the Senate. A little bit of back-of-the-envelope calculations on my part in the last few days. Democratic senators represent 56% of the American public. Republican senators represent 44%. Oh, that 56 number includes the independents, Bernie Sanders and Angus King in Maine, who vote with the Democrats. Caucus with the Democrats. So Democrats represent 56%, the Republicans represent 44%. So David Brooks, tell me why the democracy-loving American public thinks that the 44% should be able to raise the middle finger constantly to the 56%. If the American public believes in democracy, prove it in 2018 and throw the bums out. If the American public believe in democracy, then let's make sure that the Supreme Court overturns the gerrymandering rules that give the Republicans a majority in the Virginia House of Delegates despite losing badly at the polls. to control the Wisconsin and Pennsylvania state and congressional delegations simply because they've drawn the boundaries, not because the American people want that. With all due respect to David Brooks, screw you and your bullshit self-serving democracy garbage. You want democracy? Throw the bums out. He is right about one thing, though. The country is ungovernable at this point. And Democratic voters, you better throw these bums out. Because right now, the Senate and the House of Representatives are incapable of governing or honest governance in any way, shape, or form. Before we go, I'd like to talk briefly about the Women's March. The one-year anniversary, a protest against Donald Trump and the regressive policies that this country and politics that this country is engaging in. Worldwide, 2 million people stood up to fight at 700 sites around the world, protesting the Trump administration and the United States regressing. 200,000 people protested in New York, 600,000 in Los Angeles. I don't know why New York got our asses kicked by Los Angeles on that one, other than I'm sure their weather was better. This is blowback at the United States and Trump. This is the hope for the future. Samantha Power, Obama's UN representative, remarked recently that Emily's List had a record several years ago of helping 900-something female candidates run for office. This year, they've had over 25,000 apply to run for office. Be one of them, get behind them, fight. Because if we maintain this passion, this willingness to fight for the future of this country, that's the only way this country ultimately wins. Finally, before we leave, we talk a little bit about the tax bill. We said that we would keep bringing up reminders because we'd hate for our short memories to forget about that one. And over the last couple of weeks, some of the information that's come up about the tax bill, it turns out, you know how the tax bill was supposed to encourage American businesses to come back to America? Well, it turns out they reward American businesses for moving overseas, where they will pay one half the tax rate they do in America. Isn't that nice? Also this week, it turns out the tax bill will reduce affordable housing in this country because of changing the way the tax incentives work on that one. The big banks will win. We talked about that before. And according to the Center for Responsible Politics, the amount of lobbying in the first 9 months of this administration to get this tax bill that will deliver 83% of its benefits in 10 years to the wealthiest Americans set heights we haven't seen for some time. Anyway, that's our show for today. Before we go, we have a listener question. Sorry about that. We have a listener question we'd like to add into our discussion today.
Yes, Damian, thank you. This one is from Sharon in Bayside. It says, in the coming weeks, Mueller will be interviewing Trump. What do you think will be revealed, if anything, from this interview?
Well, Mueller, what will be revealed? I think the most interesting thing, this is the unstoppable force against the immovable object. I presume that one of the things that has to happen is some kind of action against the president for lying to federal investigators. He seems incapable of not telling a lie for the amount of time that he might be interviewed. You know, much has been made in this country about the fact that Donald Trump had promised that he was going to go willingly and happily go talk to Robert Mueller, the special counsel. And then, of course, over the last couple of weeks, he's gone back on that promise. So it's been said. Now, to be fair to Trump, what he had actually said is that he would be willing to talk to the special counsel and want to talk to the counsel 100%. Now, 100% isn't completely, you know, Trump's a football fan. He knows that percent goes up to 110, 120 at least. So when he said 100%, he didn't mean, you know, completely. But what do I think is going to happen? I think Trump's going to perjure himself, and that could be really entertaining. And I think the good news here, Mueller has clearly going to work his way up a little bit. Thanks, Sharon, for this question. We did want to talk about Russia today, but we got caught up in the other things that were pressing. He's been working his way up, as we've seen from the week, from the last few weeks. He's worked his way up. You know, the Attorney General keeps lying. Other people through the Trump administration. He seems to be leaving Trump for last or just about last, seemingly indicating that he's worked his way there. My expectation is that there are absolutely traps waiting for Trump because he's got testimony that will contradict things that Trump is going to be saying.
I think his lawyers want written questions or as many written questions ahead of time as possible.
Well, that makes sense. You know, we talked a few weeks ago on this show about after 9/11, how Bush refused to testify about anything relating to 9/11 and our lack of preparedness for it. And finally, they ended up relenting because the 9/11 families put so much pressure on them. Here, it's a special counsel that's making them relent. But even then, Bush would only testify not under oath and along with Vice President Dick Cheney to try to keep their stories straight. So the written questions will help. The lawyers will know how to draft it in a way that no matter what the people had said beforehand, no matter what testimonies were there, there's going to be a lot of do not recall. In other words, instead of it didn't happen, there's going to be do not recall. But there's a big question at this point we're all wondering about is how much does the Trump administration know about what Steve Bannon has said? Clearly, Jeff Sessions has gone and told them everything he said to the Independent Counsel. But what about some of these other guys? What about Papadopoulos? Does Trump know everything that he's testified? And so there's a real perjury trap here. Or at least he probably won't be under oath, but he will still be lying to a federal investigator if it comes to that, and that too is a crime.
What was that phrase for avoiding a perjury rap?
Do not recall. I do not recall. Yeah, it will be. Take a look at that one. When Trump finally does speak to Robert Mueller, it will be interesting when word leaks out how many times they use the term do not recall or some version of that. I guess with Trump, what the hell, it makes sense. He doesn't really seem to recall what he had for breakfast on any given day. Anyway, I think that's it for the show today. No more listener questions, at least none that are pressing. Anyway, thank you for joining us. As always, more on Russia hopefully next week, unless we have some more shutdown crises or something else that require a lot of explanation. Anyway, like Looking Forward, go to forwardnationradio.com. That's forwardnationradio.com and get the full experience. You'll see the video from this in every episode there and on our YouTube channel as well. Don't miss the next Forward Nation Radio podcast on Podbean at podbean.com. For those of you who are listening to the podcast, thanks. I like to listen to podcasts too. But try to watch the show on YouTube or on our website periodically so that you can see the brilliant things that our team is doing with regard to some of our graphics. If you love what you heard, like what you heard, tolerate what you heard, please like us on Facebook and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Tell your friends, spread the word, Forward Nation Radio. Thanks for joining us. See you next week.
You've been listening to Forward Nation Radio with David Leventhal.